You are now invited to join class session 530 of the Warren County Radio Bible School. And you know that school bell means that class is going to be in session. And this is the morning in which we have our special feature. And that is we read from the Rockcliffe Review. Now this is the little bulletin that we print out on a copy machine, and we fold, and we have it ready for everyone that attends the services at Rockcliffe on the Sunday morning. And it usually has a lot of news and events concerning this little family of God that meets in this congregation, at this location, and in this meeting house. But it also includes a somewhat summary of the sermon that I preach on that Sunday, so people can not only hear the sermon, but sort of take home sort of a synopsis from it, or something supplemental to it. And this particular Sunday, when I was preaching at Rockcliffe, I was preaching on the passage from Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 56, where it talks about how Jesus walked on water. Let me read that to you. When Jesus walked on water, I have seen a mountain lake so tranquil under the stars that it would seem as though a person could walk upon its surface. When Jesus walked on water, it was in the midst of a violent storm. Matthew 14, 22 through 36. Mark, in Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 56. And John, in John chapter 6, verses 15 through 21, document how the story was being told. And you ought to remember when you read these accounts that while Mark was documenting this story, Matthew and John had been there. This is similar to the story of the storm that arose when Jesus was asleep in the boat. That is recorded by Matthew in Matthew chapter 8, 23 through 27, Mark in Mark chapter 4, 36 through 41, and Luke in Luke chapter 8, 22 through 25. In both of these stories, there was a sudden storm at night on the Sea of Galilee, and the disciples struggled against the storm, and Jesus calmed the waters, and the disciples were rebuked for their little faith. But in this story, the disciples were alone when the storm arose, and Jesus came to them walking on the water. The stories are similar, but they're not the same. These are two different events. Matthew tells us that Peter also walked on the water. We would love to tell how Peter was the only disciple to venture from the boat, how he began to sink when he took his eyes away from Jesus and considered the storm, and how he cried out to Jesus for salvation in Matthew 14, 28 through 31. But we will be considering this story from Mark's account. Many speculate that Mark is documenting Peter's testimony of these events. But Mark did not include this part about Peter in his account. Jesus had fed the 5,000 in the wilderness. He sent his apostles across the sea and dismissed the multitude. He himself retreated to the mountains alone to spend the time with his Father in prayer. It was in the fourth watch of the night, that's between 3 a.m. and the dawn, that Jesus saw his disciples out at sea, toiling and rowing against the wind. There's a contrast between Jesus peacefully alone in the mountains and the disciples struggling in the midst of the storm. They were several miles out at sea, and it must have been a miracle that Jesus saw them at all. This should remind us that Jesus is always watching when we struggle against trials. Jesus came to them walking on the sea. How he came to be so near to them so soon is not told. The disciples were not expecting him. When they saw him, their fears got the best of them, and they cried out in fear, supposing they were seeing a ghost. It appears they were more afraid of what they thought they were seeing than they were of the storm itself. We may remember when we have considered the irrational, when our fears have overwhelmed us. Jesus spoke to them, saying, Be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid, Mark 6 and verse 50. Note the order of his sayings. It begins with a positive admonition. Be of good cheer. It ends with a negative one. Be not afraid. In between are the words, it is I. That is the central message. Jesus brought the calm around him to the boat. And when Jesus stepped into the vessel, the calm around the boat spread to the sea. But the calm had not yet come to the heart, singular, of his disciples. They were sore amazed in themselves beyond measure and wondered, for they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. Mark 6, verses 51 through 52. The disciples who told this story were not complimenting themselves. By now, having seen what they had seen, they should not have been so amazed as they were. The miracles of Jesus are documented in credible collaborative accounts, so we might believe. The inhabitants of Gennesaret had heard of Jesus. They knew him when they saw him. They came to him expecting signs and wonders. They ran through that whole region round about and began to carry in beds those that were sick when they heard where he was, and whithersoever he entered into villages or cities or country, they laid the sick in streets and besought him that they might touch as it were the border of his garment, and as many as touched him were made whole. Mark 6, verses 53 through 56. His disciples should have already had such faith, and so should we. Well, that was the gist of the sermon that morning. I read that to you because the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Now, with the conclusion of that special feature, we're going to return to our regular Bible lesson, and we're studying about Elijah and the prophets of Baal. We're looking at the notes that E.A. Elam prepared for the Sunday schools of April 13th, 1924, to help guide us in this study. And so far what we have seen was Elijah stood with the 450 prophets of Baal and challenged them to this contest. And they laid their wood on the altar and prepared their sacrifice and prayed unto Baal in a frenzy that Baal would send fire down from heaven and accept their sacrifice. But there was not any answer, nor a word, neither any that regarded. And now it's Elijah's turn. He repaired the altar and put the wood and the sacrifice thereon, and then to put what he was going to do beyond any possibility of deception. He had 12 barrels of water poured upon his sacrifice, that is about 36 gallons poured upon his altar, that it could be drenched and soaked, and so there'd be no deception here, no concealed fire. And Elijah prayed to God, and he prayed to God in a very calm and reverent and intelligent and deliberate manner, in such contrast with those prophets of Baal. And we read in 1 Kings chapter 18 and in verse 38, that then the fire of Jehovah fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. In answer to Elijah's prayer, this fire of Jehovah fell, consuming all that was about the altar. God sent fire upon the altar that Moses had built. In Leviticus 9 and verse 22 and 24, we read that Aaron lifted up his hands toward the people and blessed them, and he came down from offering the sin offering and the burnt offering and the peace offering. And Moses and Aaron went into the tent of meeting and came out and blessed the people. And the glory of Jehovah appeared unto the people. And there came forth fire from before Jehovah and consumed upon the altar the burnt offerings and the fat. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. David had an altar built, and fire came from heaven upon that altar. In 1 Chronicles chapter 21, in verse 26, we read, David built an altar unto Jehovah, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, and called upon Jehovah. And he answered him from heaven, by fire upon the altar of burnt offering. We read about Solomon doing this in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, in verse 1. When Solomon had made an end of praying, the fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering, the sacrifices, and the glory of Jehovah filled the house. And so we've read in other places where God had accepted the kind of offering that people did. When they offered it according to His will and in His directions, God accepted that by sending fire from heaven. And so God demonstrated that He accepted Elijah's offering too. And so 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 39, when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, Jehovah, He is God. Jehovah, He is God. The agreement and test was that the God that answered by fire, let Him be God. Well, the people saw this and were convinced. They hesitated no longer, limping between the two sides, acknowledging Jehovah is the true God in reverence and awe. They fell on their faces, saying Jehovah is God. This was the answer to Elijah's question about whether Baal or Jehovah is God in 1 Kings 18:21. When Elijah came near to the people and said, how long go ye limping between two sides? If Jehovah be God, follow Him, but if Baal, then follow him. At that time the people answered him not a word, but now they shouted, Jehovah is God. To own Jehovah as the true God, or now to acknowledge Jesus as the Christ, and at the same time to refuse to obey Him, is to prove false and untrue to one's convictions. These people proved their sincerity and conviction by acting at once upon Elijah's order to take the prophets of Baal, and not one of them escape. And Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishron, and they slew them there. And that was God's law, that such prophets should be slain. Deuteronomy 13, 1 through 5 and 18 through 20. In the goodness and mercy of God for the salvation of the nation, these false prophets were slain. It seems that Ahab had no choice but to allow that to happen. The execution of these prophets was just because God had done it in His judgment is always righteous. Romans 2 and verse 5. All idolaters, false teachers, with all who know not God and obey not the gospel of Jesus Christ will be punished with eternal destruction from the face of the Lord and from the power of His might. After the prophets were slain, there was an abundance of rain. The idolatry of the king and of the people had occasioned the drought. And now that it was accomplished, the chastening effect, rain would come. Now let's read 1 Kings chapter 18, beginning in verse 41, where Elijah said to Ahab, get thee up and drink, for the sound of abundance of rain is here. So Ahab went up to eat and drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Carmel. He bowed himself to the earth and put his face between his knees and said to his servant, go look now toward the sea. And he went and looked and said, there is nothing. And he said, go again seven times. And it came to pass, behold, there ariseth a cloud out of the sea as small as a man's hand. And he said, go up, saying to Ahab, make ready thy chariot and get thee down, that the rain not stop thee. And it came to pass a little while, the heavens grew black with clouds and a whirlwind, and there was a great rain in the hand of Jehovah.